Let's reintroduce Kim Goldman, a return guest here on Legal Face-Off. You know her. She is Ron Goldman's sister, also an advocate, a writer, a mother. She calls herself a friend, a daughter, a hockey, a basketball, and a football fan, among many things. But Kim, your newest endeavor is a podcast called Confronting O.J. Simpson. Welcome back to Legal Face-Off.
Thanks for having me.
Kim, it's been 25 years since your brother Ron was tragically murdered. Why did you decide to revisit the case with your podcast?
I for a very long time, I've listened to everybody else tell a story, tell their version of a story that they think people want to hear. We've listened to a lot of versions that involve fiction. So I think for me, it was just kind of reclaiming control over something that's been out of control and telling it from a different perspective than I think we've heard before, because it's me and there are people that I know and more intimate kind of conversations, I think.
So, Kim, what do you want listeners to learn about your brother and the case that they didn't already know?
Well, about my brother specifically, I think that, the very first episode is pretty gut-wrenching. It goes back to our childhood. We grew up in Chicago and Buffalo Grove, so we talked to some of his friends from junior high and high school. I really wanted people to get a well-rounded view of who my brother was and who he meant to so many people. But for the show itself, I think I want people just to understand the devastating effects that this case has had on everybody involved 25 years later, to understand what went into various decisions, whether it was putting on specific pieces of evidence or testimony, to not putting them on, to juror discussions, expert witnesses, media, brief experts. I mean, I want people to take away something that they don't think that they've read or seen before.
Kim, it's interesting because I was listening to our last podcast this morning a couple of weeks ago, and we had on the parents of one of the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting victims, and they were talking about their efforts to limit notoriety of mass shooters, keep them out of the media. You've been very vocal in not referring to O.J. Simpson by his name, but rather you've called him the killer, the murdering liar. Yet he continues to be, you know, very prominent. And in fact, he is in the title of your podcast. Explain to our listeners how you've been dealing with him over the last 25 years and this dichotomy of course, using his name to keep the memory of your brother and the stories you want to tell alive, but also not wanting to give this individual, O.J. Simpson, continued fame and notoriety.
Wow, that's a really good question. So I struggle with that, to be honest with you, because the choice to call him killer is my own. I can call him by his name. I think people think I'm going to self-combust if I call him by his name. I just choose not to, because I think calling him by his name is a little too casual and too familiar. For a very long time, it used to frustrate me that anchors, you know, news people would just refer to him by his first name as if they were beer drinking buddies, and it just annoyed me. And so sitting in court one day with Dominic Dunn, who was a friend and a fellow victim, kind of said to me, well, he's a killer. That's what we should be calling him. And I said, yes, that's exactly right. So that's what it was. But the purpose of the show is that this is the first season, and this is the story that we're confronting. Next season, it's going to be a different name. I don't necessarily have a problem calling perpetrators by their name. I can appreciate both sides of it. I just always want to make sure people understand and remember the brutality in which people died. I think we've become pretty desensitized to how much violence we have in the world. So I'm kind of all over the place on it, to be honest with you.
Which is understandable. I mean, obviously understandable. I mean, it's something you've been dealing with for so many years, and obviously, you know, very, very difficult situation.
Kim, you interviewed several key people involved with the trial of the century in your podcast, including prosecutor Marcia Clark and Cato Kalin. What insight have these guests brought?
You know, I think for me, specifically with Cato, for example, I think a lot of people, you know, found him to be such a goofball and to not take it seriously. And I had been harboring some anger, I think, for a while towards him, because I thought, you know, you're involved in this enormous case. You know, take it more seriously. Stop goofing around up there. I mean, that was what my impression was. And so when I spoke to him, we talked about that and about how scared he was and how intimidating this whole process was. And I don't think folks understand when you're in a courtroom, you know, when you have a jury and you have a prosecutor and a judge and the camera and the defendant, and it's scary. And I think he was nervous. I think Marcia was mad that he wasn't, in her mind, revealing information that he supposedly said in a different conversation, in a different testimony. So I think there's some understanding there as to why each of them felt the way they did. I go back to, I want people to understand how this impacts people. I mean, Cato specifically, you know, he hibernated for a year or so after this case because of the death threats and the harassment and the stalking, you know, and he was just a guy living on the property who was on the phone with some woman and then banging on the wall, you know, I mean, and there he is now in the midst of this whole thing. And I think, like I said, there's just a level of insight that we haven't heard, I don't think.
Kim, last week, speaking of difficult things that you've dealt with, last week, O.J. Simpson posted a video on Twitter announcing that he created an account. He already has 650,000 followers who will hear his, quote, thoughts and opinions on just about everything. That's how he has, that's what he's promised. Disturbingly, at the end of the video, OJ said, "I've got a little getting even to do." Mm-hmm. I'm sure that elicited a reaction from you and your family.
Yeah, it was alarming. This is part of the anxiety that I feel, knowing that he's, you know, walking the streets. When he was in prison in Las Vegas a handful of years ago for that 9-year break, I was able to breathe a little bit deeper, and now this is what I'm up against. You know, at any given moment, he has the freedom to say and do whatever he wants, and I get that, but it does interrupt my flow. It does cause me pause. It's upsetting, and he refers to himself as yours truly, and he chuckles, and it's just this brazen kind of arrogance. And at the end of the day, two people are still dead. Whether or not you think it was him, he doesn't go on there and talk about the loss. He doesn't talk about his innocence. He talks about football, I mean, you know, and fantasy football, or advice his mama gave him. I mean, like, it's just weird to me. But you know, I guess to each his own, and people aren't responding too positively towards him, I don't think.
Kim, I'm fascinated by your discussions with the jurors. I haven't heard that part yet. But, you know, when I watched the interviews with the jurors in the ESPN documentary, I was struck by basically their admission in that documentary that they ignored evidence of O.J. Simpson's guilt as mm-hmm. a means of getting back for the Rodney King situation. I found that, mm-hmm. you know, I knew that, we heard that, but I found it shocking to hear these people say that. It's really impressive that you spoke to them. What was your takeaway from your discussion with the jurors who acquitted O.J. Simpson?
I think, honestly, those were probably the more difficult conversations out of all the ones I had. I think we were all a little bit nervous going into that. I appreciate that they were willing to sit down with me. That could not have been easy. But neither gentleman that I spoke with backed down. They both, you know, were pretty committed to their decision. One of them in particular kind of confirmed what I always thought, and that's just that they stopped listening, that they wanted to go home. They were tired of being there. They were resentful that they were sequestered. And that 3.5-hour deliberation window was a farce. That's the only thing he apologized to me for, which was wasting that time and not really deliberating and giving the case its proper due. But they already had their minds made up, and he confirmed that.
Kim, you are a tremendously positive force in your community as a victims advocate, among other work you do. Can you share with our listeners some of the other work that you do on behalf of others?
Thank you for asking. My everyday job, which I'm taking a break from today, is I run a nonprofit organization called The Youth Project, and I provide free mental health to teenagers 12 to 18. Our kids are dealing with depression and suicide and domestic violence and sexual assault, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've been doing that since 2005. I also am the vice chair for the National Center of Victims of Crime, and I volunteer on a multitude of other boards and organizations that work with sexual assault survivors and domestic violence and some of the families from the Aurora shooting. So I really just try to be as involved as I can, and I'm a mom to a 15-year-old kid, and that's a full-time job. And so, you know, I'm doing my best every day.
Kim, we learn something new about you every day. Obviously, we know about the books. You're a best-selling author, New York Times, but you have some ties here to Chicagoland, or at least their teams. Bulls and Blackhawks fan? How did this come about?
Because I grew up in Chicago, so I didn't come into sports until a little bit later. I'm wearing my Chicago Bulls shirt right now. Being a mom to a teenager, my kid loves basketball, so he's been a Bulls fan since the time he could say basketball. I don't know, it's just my love of sports, and in the last couple of years, I've become a football fan too, so I'm busy.
That is Kim Goldman, at Kim E. Goldman on Twitter, and the podcast, Confronting O.J. Simpson, the handle there, at Confronting Pod. Kim, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.